Iran's Ayatollah Khamenei advises a global alliance to be formed to counter the plots hatched by the West and to address major world issues appropriately. Israel presses ahead with its indiscriminate strikes across Gaza, killing more civilians. The death toll from the regime's attacks is reaching 16,000. Following a pause after the beginning of the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, Israeli Prime Minister's court hearing will resume over corruption and other charges. And welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has stressed the importance of forming an alliance among those countries standing against U.S. bullying. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei is of the opinion that such an alliance could play a significant role in addressing crucial global issues, including the longstanding issue of Palestine. The leader also touched upon the 75-year history of suffering and torture endured by Palestinians in Gaza. He said the Israeli crimes have gotten too exposed to be concealed anytime. The leader made the remarks during a meeting with visiting Cuban president in Tehran. Miguel Diaz-Canel, for his part, underscored the high potential between Havana and Tehran for cooperation, particularly in dealing with the West's interventionist measures and sanctions. He also criticized the international community for turning a blind eye to the, quote, unacceptable genocide taking place in Gaza. Iran's president says the U.S. will not be able to impede the progress of countries that are standing against it.
The Americans believe that by imposing sanctions, they could stop our countries or they could force us to surrender. This is what the fact that they have neglected, this is not true, and this is miscalculation like all other miscalculation that they have had.
Raisi made the remarks during a presser with his visiting Cuban counterpart. The Iranian president also said cooperation with Cuba, that's also under sanctions, can nullify the effects of restrictions. Cuban President Miguel Diaz-Canel is leading a high-ranking delegation in his visit to Tehran. Prior to the presser, the two sides signed a number of MOUs in different fields, including economy, agriculture, and the health industry. The visit by Diaz-Canel is the first by a Cuban president in more than 20 years. Cuba's late president, Fidel Castro, last traveled to Iran in 2001. Well, Iran has once again strongly condemned what it calls the atrocious crimes by Israel against Palestinians, saying the U.S. is complicit in the regime's genocide. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said in his weekly presser that Washington has practically stood beside Tel Aviv instead of taking steps to end the crisis. Nasser Kanani said the U.S. Secretary of State even participated in the meeting of the Israeli War Cabinet during the temporary truce in Gaza last week. Kanani stressed that the U.S. logistical and military support for Israel has been the main driving force for the Israeli war on Palestinian territory. Well, nearly 2 months into Israel's bloody onslaught on the Gaza Strip, and the regime is wreaking havoc across every corner of the war-ridden territory, leaving behind a trail of death and destruction. In the north, the regime has pummeled the Jabalia and Nusrat refugee camps, killing scores of people. It has also struck a school in western Gaza City where thousands of displaced people were taking shelter. And in the east, regime forces reduced over 50 homes to rubble, killing hundreds. Many more are trapped under debris. Multiple areas in the south, including Khan Yunis, were also targeted in fresh Israeli attacks, resulting in the death of scores of people. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Israeli forces have directly bombed 14 hospitals. Only a few medical facilities in the Palestinian territory are functional, inundated with thousands of wounded people.
Several ambulances from southern and central Gaza headed to Kamal Adwan Hospital to evacuate many injured civilians, as the hospital can no longer provide the necessary medical care. The ambulances were blocked by the Israeli troops in Salah Ad-Din area, and four medics were arrested. In addition, eight medical crews were previously arrested despite prior coordination, raising the number of medical crews arrested by the Israeli occupation to 12 medics. The arrest came when the crew members carried out their duties, thus blatantly violating international laws. However, the ambulances made their way to Kamal Adwan Hospital to evacuate several injuries to southern Gaza because the hospital was out of service due to the continuous Israeli attacks.
We live in a rented apartment in a residential building. The house next door was bombed and we were hit by the shrapnel. My daughter is in a serious condition and suffers from bleeding. She has been in the ICU for 3 days and survives on a breathing apparatus. She is in a critical condition, as you see. She does not speak or hear.
Gaza's health ministry has accused Israel of intentionally striking hospitals to shut them down. Israel resumed its war in Gaza on Friday after a 7-day truce. The regime has killed nearly 16,000 Palestinians since this latest onslaught on Gaza began on October the 7th. More than half of Gaza's homes have been destroyed, leading to the displacement of over 80% of the territory's population. Hamas resistance movement says it has targeted different parts of occupied lands in response to the Israeli genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. The sounds of explosions could be heard in some neighborhoods of the Israeli capital following a barrage of rockets fired from Gaza. The military wing of Hamas says sirens were heard after it launched missiles targeting the Israeli city of Ashkelon to the south of the occupied lands. There's no immediate report of casualties. Al-Qassam has also attacked the Nirim region in northwestern Negev with short-range missiles. Resistance fighters also target nearly a dozen Israeli armored vehicles and tanks with Yassin 105 mortar shells. Also, an Israeli tank advancing into Beit Lahia from the east came under Al-Qassam fire. Well, a senior Hamas official has condemned the United States for being complicit in Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. The representative of the Hamas resistance movement in Lebanon, Osama Hamdan, said the U.S. administration must be held accountable in the international criminal courts. He said the U.S. officials will pay the price for the crimes committed against Palestinians. Elsewhere, in his remarks, Hamdan said, unlike what Israel has claimed, the whole world witnessed how humane Hamas treated Israeli captives. He also highlighted the maltreatment of Palestinian prisoners at the hand of Israeli guards and also talked about them even being denied necessary medical treatment. Well, Israel's prime minister will be facing the resumption of his long-running trial on corruption charges following a pause due to the onslaught on Gaza. According to Israeli media, the court will resume hearing the case, the first session of which was held in 2020 and has been repeatedly delayed since then. Benjamin Netanyahu is charged with fraud, bribery, and breach of trust in 3 cases. He has denied all the charges. Netanyahu has also been accused of pushing for judicial reforms to bypass his legal problems. The contested legislation triggered months of mass protests against his cabinet ahead of the Palestinians' military operation on October the 7th. Protesters argue that Netanyahu is trying to use the overhaul to quash possible judgments against him. Yemen's armed forces say they have targeted 2 more Israeli ships in the Red Sea in response to the regime's genocide in Gaza.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces, with the help of Allah Almighty, carried out this morning a targeting operation against 2 Israeli ships in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. The targeted ships were the Unity Explorer and ship number 9. The first ship was targeted with a naval missile, and the second ship was targeted with a naval drone. The targeting operation came after the 2 ships ignored warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Saudi added that Yemen's army will continue to block movement of Israeli ships in the Red and Arabian Seas until the regime halts its aggression against Palestinians in Gaza. He also warned that those who cooperate with Israeli ships will also be a legitimate target for Yemeni armed forces. Meanwhile, the Pentagon also reported attacks on an American ship and multiple commercial vessels in the Red Sea by unmanned aerial vehicles. Israeli forces have launched yet another deadly raid in the occupied West Bank, killing a number of Palestinians there. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil has given us the details.
Just in less than an hour ago, the Israeli forces retreated from the refugee camp of Qalandia, northern Al-Quds, and the Kufr Aqab town, northern Al-Quds, after an operation that lasted for almost 3 hours. During this operation, Israeli forces shot and killed yet another young Palestinian man, 32-year-old Ali Alqam, from the refugee camp of Qalandia, was shot dead, according to Palestinian paramedics. He was shot in the heart. Earlier, Israeli forces had raided Qalqilia, northern the occupied West Bank. This time, an undercover unit raided Qalqilia. This means Israeli forces, disguised as Arabs or Palestinians, they raided the Qalqilia city with Palestinian vehicles or vehicles with Palestinian license, and then they ambushed a car where Palestinians had been inside. They opened fire at the car and they killed two Palestinians.
Well, I'd like to welcome a couple of guests to this program to look at the overall situation in Gaza and, of course, the occupied territories. Charlotte Cates, coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver, and James String, peace activist out of London. Welcome both of you to the program. Let's start it off with Charlotte. Charlotte, we're almost 2 months into this genocide, and we continue to hear various entities, international entities, talking about the need to stop the violence, talking about the need to save the lives of kids. In the meantime, we're having days with 600, 700, 800 more Palestinians being killed. Your take on all of this and how this genocide is continuing to take place with basically the silence of the so-called international community?
I think it depends on what we're calling the international community, because when we're talking about countries like the United States, Britain, Canada, France, Germany, these countries are not just being silent. They are active participants and, in fact, directors of the genocide that is taking place against the Palestinian people that is being conducted by the Zionist regime. But in many ways, it's Biden and Blinken that are calling the shots, not just Netanyahu and Gallant. So it's the international community, if we talk about the people of the world. I'm speaking to you today, not from Vancouver, but from Johannesburg, where the global conference, the Global Campaign to Return to Palestine, is holding its fifth convention. And there's a tremendous amount of support with people here from over 70 countries who are mobilizing demonstrations and mass movements of tens of thousands and indeed hundreds of thousands and millions of people around the world. So if we're talking about the people of the world, it's very clear that the people stand with Palestine. But it's also very clear that the big imperialist powers are arming, funding, and directing this Zionist genocide. And it's going to take the kind of confrontation of imperialism that we're seeing from the Palestinian resistance, from the Yemeni resistance and the Yemeni armed forces and their confrontation in the Red Sea, that we need to rise to the level of struggle and sacrifice that we are seeing in order to confront and shut down this weapons manufacturing machines, the transportation of goods and arms and weaponry to the occupation. We need to take action to shut that down if we want to bring this genocide to an end, because these imperialist powers are never going to stop it. They're funding it and fueling it.
Yes, indeed. Well, James, your take. You heard what Charlotte said about the people of the world, that the majority of the people of the world now are becoming more and more aware, and many are becoming very active against the Israeli regime. But at the same time, the regimes, the Western regimes, as she said, continue not only to turn a blind eye, but are definitely very much involved in the aggression of this regime. So what has to happen now? How do you see this working itself out? On the one hand, we have the people. On the other hand, we have the regimes that are making the decision.
Well, I think the obvious answer is that the people in charge of the regimes, our prime ministers and MPs, both in the UK and United States and Germany and France, need to be implicated in the judicial process. We've talked, I think, about the need for an international war crimes or genocide tribunal. Obviously, it's got to be orchestrated by the United Nations, which is a difficulty. But in addition to naming Netanyahu and his cabinet in the war crimes and genocide that they're carrying out on Gaza, needs to include the complicity of people like our Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Joe Biden and all those people involved on the, as you say, Western side of this dreadful catastrophe that's being perpetrated on those wretched poor people in Gaza. It's got to happen soon. These people are not going to last very long. I don't know how they lasted so long under siege for so many years, and now totally deprived of food and water and proper medical aid. It's so depressing to see their houses being destroyed. They've done nothing wrong. They're not guilty of hatred against the Israelis. They're just simply refugees from previous parts of Palestine that the Zionists have expelled, terrorized them out of. So there's got to be these war crimes. There's got to be a war crimes tribunal, or possibly specific cases against the individuals, and to get those Western, as I've said, powers to realize that they're on the wrong side of justice. They must be implicated too. That would be the way forward. I haven't started that yet because I've been concentrating on Netanyahu in my attempts to get people like Erdogan and the Chinese and the Russians to take action at the Security Council. But okay. You know, my voice is not very strong.
Okay. Thank you both for being with me, Charlotte Cates, Coordinator Samadoun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Johannesburg, and James String, peace activist out of London. And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldness edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran.
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. Oh God, it's hard to see these images. Horrible. The child killer Zionist regime again bombed another Gaza hospital. Oh, poor Palestinian children. All these crimes against women and children in Gaza just took me to decades ago when the Ba'athist regime of Saddam, with the help of Western regimes, imposed an 8-year war on Iran. But we resisted and emerged victorious without giving an inch of our soil to the enemy. And for Palestinians, of course, resistance is the answer. May God help them. I was wondering if I could visit the National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense for today. Yes, why not? Iran National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense is one of the most modern museums in the West Asia region, where you will be traveling in time to almost half a century ago and witness the dramatic and remarkable events that finally came to determine not only the history and destiny of Iran, but also that of the region. This story began by Iran's Islamic Revolution, to be followed by an 8-year heroic defense known as Holy Defense against the Ba'athist regime of Saddam and the Western partners in crime. The museum, on a landscape site of about 25 hectares in north-central Tehran, is a gigantic war memorial with its collections concentrated heavily on the 1980 to 1988 U.S.-backed Iraqi-imposed war on Iran. What makes the museum stand out among its rivals is its effective use of multimedia tools to bring to life a glorious past that the nation will always take pride in. The National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense includes 8 halls, including a section as the Memorial of Holy Defense, where the concepts of Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense are reflected through digital technologies. Through the use of visual and conceptual media, these halls display the chronology of developments in Iran and present a totally new definition of the concept of museums. Subway for a ride to Shahid Hemat Highway, where I can get to the National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense. In this museum, I'll get familiar with the narratives of Iranian heroes, with the military equipment of those days. I mean, during the Holy Defense era and with the martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the security of the people. Shahid Hemadi Station. Oh, here, I have to get off the train. The National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense. I'm in a hall which is called Butterflies Hall. Oh, it's impressive. The Hall of Butterflies greets you on arrival. This hall is dedicated to martyrs and victims of the war. Oh, it is filled with personal belongings found on the battlefield. Oh my God! The projection mapping in this hall is unique. I wish you were here to see it yourself. Projection mapping is a projection technique used to turn objects and elements into display surface for video projection, as if they are real. Which its walls are covered with martyrs' photos of the 8-year imposed war. Look at them! Oh, most of them are young. God bless their souls. To maximize the utilization of the information and resources, audio commentary in Farsi, English, Arabic is provided in every hall. Projection mapping video walls, photo montages, sound effects, and even temperature adjusters have been employed to take the visitors back to the actual times of the war. this museum is so huge that it takes much time to visit every corner of it. I came out for some fresh air, and then I'll get back to the museum to discover more about the story of resistance days of Iran. You can also take a close look at the tanks and missile launchers outside the museum's building. I really appreciate the dynamic design of this museum. I also appreciate the determination and resolve of my nation's youths at a time when we were not as fully equipped as we are today, but we resisted against the entire West and didn't give an inch of our soil to the enemy.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach toward supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Brothers and sisters, there is another feature for the supplications that we will discuss in this episode, God willing. One feature of the supplications, specifically the supplications of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, is the reference to the Islamic governance and government and invoking Allah to protect its stability, defending the borders of the Islamic countries by strong, faithful men. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has devoted the 27th supplication of Sahifatu Sajjadiyya to the guards of the borders and the armies of the Islamic state and government. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has made people alert to defend their Islamic heritage. وَحَسِّنْ ثُغُورَ الْمُسْلِمِينَ وَأَيِّدْ حُمَاتَهَا بِقُوَّتِكَ O my Lord, protect the borders of the Muslim countries. Support their guards with your power. كَثِّرْ عِدَّتَهُمْ وَاشْحَذْ أَسْلِحَتَهُمْ O my God, increase their numbers. Sharpen their weapons. Guard their land and defend their country. Unite their groups and manage their affairs. You see, in all these words, the addressee is the Almighty Allah, yet the reader, the reciter, the one who is engaged in this supplication truly recognizes that he is responsible. He is the one whom Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is actually talking to, because it is his responsibility to first defend his country, to help his country raise above these old challenges. How is it possible to manage the affairs without having the responsible people managing the affairs? Then it is the time for referring to the Almighty Allah for supplications. So these statements of these supplications refer to the organizations of Islam. The Muslims should be so organized that the enemies could not find a chance to demolish them. They could be equipped with modern weaponry to defend themselves. So this is really interesting because the phrase sharpen their weapons, washhad aslihatahum, refers to the power of dominating. And it means that the weapons should be modified in accordance with the time. The phrase teach him the sunnah and the laws means to learn the latest military tactics. And the phrase teach them what they do not know, عَرِّفْهُمْ مَا يَجْهَلُونَ وَبَصِّرْهُمْ مَا لَا يُبْصِرُونَ, means to inform them of what they ignore, enlighten them on what they do not see. And this indicates that the Islamic army should learn the military techniques, should behave diligently in accordance with the position of the enemy. Not only the army should be ready, but also it should not act foolishly.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you.
It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So this is the importance of these supplications, specifically those transmitted supplications. Not just because by reading them we will be aware of what we have on our shoulders as our responsibilities, but because of the very fact that these are those teachings existent in these supplications because of the specific time and situation Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was in. And this is the importance. Of course, it should be noticed that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has recommended this strong organization not for expanding the country, not for dominating over the poor and the needy, but he has intended to defend the Muslims, for defending the Islamic countries. Because he has said, Allahumma waqawwi bidhalika mahal ahli al-Islam. O God, make the countries of the Muslims strong and fortified. حَسِّنْ بِهِ دِيَارَهُمْ وَفَرِّغْهُمْ عَنْ مُحَارَبَتِهِمْ لِعِبَادَتِكَ. And do not make them busy with fighting in order to be free to worship you and to be alone with you, so that no one is to be worshipped on the earth save you, and that no forehead of any of them is to be covered with soil to other than you. So Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is teaching us what we need to use those organizations for. And this is the aim of those organizations. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Students at a London university have remained barred from campus following their participation in two pro-Palestine rallies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, students at a London university are demanding that they be allowed to return to classes after they were suspended following Palestine solidarity action held before and after the October 7th attack. The School of Oriental and African Studies, SOAS, suspended 4 students and 3 alumni recently for violating health and safety protocols following 2 pro-Palestine rallies held on September 29th and October 9th. The students and alumni, some of whom are members of SOAS Palestine Society Committee, took part in 2 rallies, one on September 29th during the Students' Union's Freshers' Fair and another outside the main entrance to the university on October 9th, shortly after the Zionist regime began bombing Gaza following October 7th. An internal report by the university, seen by the Middle East Eye, alleges that the students moved towards the entrance and attempt to occupy a staircase at one of the rallies. It reports that a fire alarm was activated shortly afterwards. The suspended students have denied their involvement in activating the alarm and told MEE that their suspensions were still in force as of December 2nd, with no timeline given for when they could return to their classes. One of the students told MEE, requesting anonymity, "We started chanting on the steps of the main building, where protests have always happened. In the last 18 months, there has been a real escalation in the way security has responded to student protest. So in this case, they shut all the doors of the building and security officers were filming us on their phones," the student said, adding, "Around 20 minutes in, the fire alarm went off because all the doors were shut. People were unsure of what was going to happen." The student said demonstrators left the building and moved towards a green space away from the main entrance. 3 days later, the participating students were informed that they had violated health and safety procedures and that they would be suspended as a precautionary measure. The alumni were barred from campus without a disciplinary hearing. The student said the allegation was very vague. The university administrator said that the students did not move fast enough when the fire alarm went off. There was a 30-meter gap between the demonstration and the people exiting the building. SOAS has insisted that the suspensions are unrelated to Palestine solidarity activism and that the students breached agreed-upon conditions with management. Members of the Palestine Society, however, say that they were not notified of these conditions until after the rally took place. The Palestine Society said in a statement posted on X, "This is a targeted act of political repression against." A number of the suspended students are committee members of the Palestine Society, with many members who were not present at the rally reportedly being issued with warnings. Another student told MEE, "This includes racialized students, Arab students, and international students on precarious visas. The intention is to silence the Palestine Society at this critical time. We want to get organized, and they are silencing us." According to one student, the academic board asked university administrators to drop the suspensions, but the request was rejected. Some of the students told MEE that they were seeking legal action and suing the university for discrimination under the Equality Act, as they believe they were targeted on the basis of their political beliefs. Despite some small protests continuing on campus, the students reported that the suspensions had a chilling effect on discourse about Palestine, with a lecturer reporting on X that Palestine solidarity posters had been removed from her office door. "Those who are confident enough to protest are now barred from campus. Many on campus are scared to do anything in case they get suspended as well," a student said. According to one student, elected officers at SOAS are facing pressure both from the student union CEO and the university not to support the suspended students. When contacted for comment, a SOAS spokesperson said, "While there is an ongoing investigation into health and safety breaches, the triggering of fire alarms and vandalism on our campus, we cannot comment on the details of the suspensions." We'll be right back. According to Truth Out, a pro-Palestine sit-in protest at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, earlier in November sparked a slew of accusations of anti-Semitism and violence from a pro-Israel group coupled with a concerted effort to permanently ban a student group calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Coalition Against Apartheid, CAA, at the center of organizing around ending the Zionist regime's occupation of Palestine has become a target. But despite this campaign in an already stifling climate around Palestine activism, with several universities banning pro-Palestine groups, students remain undeterred to continue their advocacy. Safiya Ogundip, president of MIT's CAA, told reporters, "There is a strong sense among the organizers within the CAA and within the broader coalition that we will be continuing to push forward and won't be swayed by any of these intimidation tactics that have been levied by the administration. I would honestly say that we are in a really strong position." On November 9th, MIT's CAA helped organize a protest on campus at Lobby 7, the main entrance to the campus. The plan was to stage a 12-hour peaceful sit-in protest. Nothing new for Lobby 7, which was the stage for a Black Lives Matter protest in 2019. The demonstrators plan to build on previous pro-Palestine actions over the past several weeks since the war on Gaza began, including a call for the university to end its MISTI Israel Lockheed Martin Seed Fund. The fund is an initiative that promotes an exchange between faculty and students at MIT and at universities and public research institutions in Israel, including at Lockheed Martin, an American defense contractor. However, the night before the protest was scheduled, organizers received notice that Lobby 7 was no longer a space that could be used to hold demonstrations on campus. Francesca Rico Ackerman, a PhD student at MIT, said, "If you're visiting MIT for the first time and you walk in the building, Lobby 7 is where you go. It's a very famous and historic place to hold protest. So for MIT, the night before, to send out communication saying, by the way, you're no longer allowed to protest in Lobby 7, and if you do, you're breaking MIT policy, was a shady move."
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Lullaby, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, now I offer my son to you. See, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in my roots, Palestine, 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 Palestine. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.